It's good to be back in Kentucky. I may not be Kentucky born and bred, but I am in Kentucky educated. I went to that great college in Danville, Kentucky, Centerton, and it was there I learned how to write. It has such a place in my heart that my own son is now in his senior year at Center. And I'm not too far away from where I spent 13 years as pastor in Indiana. So I do here on the banks of the Ohio feel very much at home. What an honor to be asked to give these lectures. I didn't know much about Southern Seminary until I started to do these volumes on the history of preaching. And there I learned about the great professors of preaching and homiletics that have exercised their ministry here. The name Broadus is, of course, very well known to me. And the first attempt at reading a book on the history of preaching was Dargon's. And so poorly informed as I was, I had never known much about Southern Seminary in Louisville until I began to study the history of preaching and what a tremendous center this is. So I am really very much honored by this invitation. What I would like to talk about is, what is it we're supposed to be doing anyhow at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning? Now, I had the standard course in homiletics at Princeton. I think we read James Stuart Stewart for a textbook. But, you know, there were so many times that on Saturday night, and I couldn't figure out what on earth that text would have to do for this congregation tomorrow morning, that I started thinking about, what is it we're supposed to be doing anyhow? I learned how to crack homiletical jokes. I learned how to tell human interest stories. But what was it that I was really supposed to be doing? And again and again, I asked myself this question, sometimes in the greatest frustration, particularly when I was working so hard to get that new church development going and it just didn't seem to be going. We started out in a Quonset hut, and still, 6 years later, we didn't have any kind of a building that looked like a church. And people used to tell me, Scotty, you'd do fine with that Quonset hut as a church if you wouldn't say it was supposed to be a Presbyterian church. If you just put Gospel Tabernacle out there, you get people crowded into it. Well, finally, we did get the church up, actually. Rather nice one. But there were many years in which I wondered, what on earth was I supposed to be doing? Well, what I'd like to do in these three lectures is share some of my thoughts on the subject, some of those things that have been significant to me. I'm not going to try to go through the whole gamut of things that could be said, but rather I'm going to take three passages in the next 3 days from the book of Exodus. First, the story of the Passover feast and the institution of Passover in Exodus 12 and 13. Second, the passage on the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20. And finally, the story of the institute or the institution of the covenant people, the initiation of the children of Israel into the covenant. Exodus 24. Now, I know this isn't where one would look for the most exciting passages. I suppose one would find much more exciting passages in the book of Acts. There we have different examples of the sermon of Peter, the sermon of Stephen, the sermons of Paul. One could talk about that. One could also look at the Gospel of John or any one of the epistles of Paul, and one could find a number of passages which would be significant as to what preaching really is. I don't plan to be exhaustive. I would rather give you a testimony as to what has been helpful for me as a preacher. And maybe some things that are not too often thought about, but are nevertheless important. And this is one of the things about studying Scripture. It has a way of continuing year after year to open up new insights, new lines of thought. And these are things that have opened up to me over the years that have helped me find in preaching the true worship of God, the worship of God that is in spirit and in truth. I'm going to ask my colleague, Dale Johnson, to read a text from Exodus 13, and we'll let that start us off.
Exodus 13, beginning with verse 3 through verse 16. Then Moses said to the people, "Commemorate this day, the day you came out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery, because the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand. Eat nothing containing yeast. Today, in the month of Abib, you are leaving. When the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Hivites, and Jebusites, the land he swore to your forefathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, you are to observe this ceremony in this month. For 7 days, eat bread made without yeast, and on the seventh day, hold a festival to the Lord. Eat unleavened bread during these 7 days. Nothing with yeast in it is to be seen among you, nor shall any yeast be seen anywhere within your borders. On that day, tell your son, I do this because of what the Lord did for me when I came out of Egypt. This observance will be for you like a sign on your hand and a reminder on your forehead that the law of the Lord is to be on your lips. For the Lord brought you out of Egypt with his mighty hand. You must keep this ordinance at the appointed time year after year. After the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites and gives it to you as he promised on oath to you and your forefathers, you are to give over to the Lord the first offspring of every womb. All of the firstborn males of your livestock belong to the Lord. Redeem with a lamb every firstborn donkey. But if you do not redeem it, break its neck. Redeem every firstborn among your sons. In days to come, when your son asks, what does this mean? Say to him, with a mighty hand, the Lord brought us out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. When Pharaoh stubbornly refused to let us go, the Lord killed every firstborn in Egypt, both man and animal. This is why I sacrifice to the Lord the first male offspring of every womb and redeem each of my firstborn sons. And it will be like a sign on your hand and a symbol on your forehead that the Lord brought us out of Egypt with his mighty hand.
This is certainly one of the primary passages on what worship is all about. It is a fundamental passage. And one might not think of it if one didn't realize that here God gives his direction as to how we are to serve him by holding a feast. And we notice several things about this text. We notice that it's to be repeated every year in the spring of the year. We hear about how during that feast, there is to be a particular menu. Particular foods are to be eaten and some foods are not to be eaten. There is the bitter herbs reminding us of the suffering of Egypt. There is the roast lamb, which reminds the children of Israel of their nomadic past. The meal is to be eaten in haste, with sandals on the feet and staff in hand. And all of these things have a symbolic meaning. Now, when I was in Tübingen many years ago, it got toward the fall of the year, and there were several of us American students that all of a sudden realized Thanksgiving wasn't going to be a day off. It was just a regular day in Germany. And it wasn't the same thing as Erntedankfest. But I was given the job of finding out some place where we could have Thanksgiving dinner. And then I found out that the Germans don't eat turkey, let alone pumpkin pies. Cornbread? Never heard of it. And I realized that each one of these foods was a peculiarly American food. And there was another thing. Thanksgiving is about a month after the German Harvest Festival. Oktoberfest, we all know about that. It's a month early. It's not November. Thanksgiving is not just a harvest festival. It is a thanksgiving for the founding of the nation, for when the Pilgrim Fathers landed in New England. So it is with the Feast of Passover. It is a thanksgiving for God having taken his slave people out of Egypt and all its bitter sorrow, crossing the Red Sea and coming into the Promised Land. And then the key thing that I want to draw attention to here is the Passover Haggadah. The fact that when this feast was eaten, the father was supposed to recount to the whole family that wonderful story of the history of salvation. How God made a promise to Abraham. How God led Abraham's descendants down into Egypt and was with them even in their suffering. And how God miraculously brought them through the Red Sea and kept them 40 years in the wilderness and finally brought them into the Promised Land. At the very center of that feast is the recounting of the history of salvation. That's the origin of the sermon. It's telling the story. The old, old story that we all know so well. I noticed a couple years ago, I was in Barnes & Noble, the Barnes & Noble closest to Princeton, and I noticed a special table was set up with various editions of the Passover Haggadah. There's a good-sized Jewish population in that area, and there were at least half a dozen Haggadahs that were on sale for those observant Jewish families. The father would best read the story of the history of salvation, but it's still there. And the marvelous thing about it is that the father says to the son, what makes this night special is that God brought me out of the slavery in Egypt into the Promised Land. And you know, just recounting that story as my story is what makes it worship. It glorifies God and at the same time sanctifies us. It glorifies God, and in our recounting it as our history, we then become part of that long procession, starting 4,000 some years ago, coming out of Egypt year after year after year, down even to the present in Louisville, Kentucky. And you notice that the text says very specifically, it shall be a day of remembrance. It shall be a day of remembrance. This salvation history, remembering it is an act of worship. Now, do you recognize that phrase? It shall be a day of remembrance. And it's almost like what we read in the Gospels, that Jesus in the upper room, when he celebrated Passover, said, "Do this in remembrance of me, not in remembrance of Moses, but from now on, do this in remembrance of me, how I have brought you through death, through crucifixion, through the agony of the garden, and through the glory of the resurrection. So now, we recount that history of redemption, and in recounting it, we make it our history." Dale, would you read for us Deuteronomy 26, 1 to 11?
"When you have entered the land the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance and have taken possession of it and settled in it, take some of the first fruits of all that you produce from the soil of the land the Lord your God is giving you and put them in a basket. Then go to the place the Lord your God will choose as a dwelling for his name and say to the priest in office at the time, 'I declare today to the Lord your God, that I have come to the land the Lord swore to our forefathers to give us.' The priest shall take the basket from his hands and set it down in front of the altar of the Lord your God. Then you shall declare before the Lord your God, 'My father was a wandering Aramean, and he went down into Egypt with a few people and lived there and became a great nation, powerful and numerous. But the Egyptians mistreated us and made us suffer, putting us in hard labor. Then we cried out to the Lord, the God of our fathers, and the Lord heard our voice and saw our misery, toil, and oppression. So the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, with great terror and with miraculous signs and wonders. He brought us to this place and gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And now I bring the first fruits of the soil that you, O Lord, have given me. Place the basket before the Lord your God and bow down before him. And you and the Levites and the aliens among you shall rejoice in all the good things the Lord your God has given you and your household."
This wonderful confession of faith, this recounting of holy history, was made at the center of the celebration of the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, if Passover was a day of remembrance, so was Tabernacles a day of remembrance. "A wandering Aramean was my father." That wonderful retelling of the story of the history of redemption. And at the center of Christian preaching is always this retelling of what God did for me. Retelling the story of, as Paul did before Agrippa, of how he was in rebellion against God and was trying to persecute the church, and on the road to Damascus was suddenly surprised by the revelation of Christ to himself, the revelation that he was indeed the Messiah. An awful lot of what we do in preaching is passing on our experience of God's redemption. Our experience of how God found us in all the sins of Egypt and brought us into a new and significant life. At the very center, then, of our preaching should be this personal affirmation that I too have experienced this history of salvation. And I thank God that I've received it up to this point, and I thank God that I will continue to receive it. And this is faith, looking forward to the fulfillment of the promises of God. We particularly like this story in our family. When our children were young, my daughter was maybe 6 years old, and she had all the authority of an older sister. And my son was maybe three. I don't know, was it Christmas or was it Easter or just Sunday dinner? But Grandma and Grandpa were there, and Aunt Elsie and Uncle Dell were there. The children had been carefully coached into behaving well when Grandma is there. And my son was having a hard time deciding whether he wanted to eat dinner in his high chair or not. And so he would climb down from his high chair, and he would walk around the dining room and wander into the kitchen and walk into my study. And finally, that was too much for my daughter. "Isaac," she said, "get back up in your high chair. You're behaving like a wandering Aramean." A wandering Aramean was my father. But, I mean, his name is Isaac, after all. Another place we find this same thing about preaching is when Jesus preaches in the synagogue at Nazareth. And Dale, would you read for us Luke 4:16-30?
"He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read. The scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, 'The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor.' Then he rolled up the scroll and gave it back to the attendant and sat down. The eyes of everyone in a synagogue were fastened on him, and he began by saying to them, 'Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing.'"
Okay. This particular passage from Luke is tremendously important in the history of Christian worship and also in the history of synagogue worship, because it tells us that it was a regular procedure in the synagogue to open up the law and to read the law, and that we can assume happened. We know from other documents. But what's particularly interesting here is that Jesus reads from the scroll of Isaiah, one of the prophets. And the idea was that one read a passage from the law and then took a passage from the prophets and used that as the basis of the interpretation that he wants to give. And here there is this beautiful thing where Jesus stands up and he reads from Isaiah and he says to them, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your ears." You know, that's another tremendous thing that we do when we preach, is we open up this dialectic between promise and fulfillment. We show that God has given us these promises of redemption and that he always fulfills them. I've always given great importance to reading both an Old Testament lesson and a New Testament lesson in the service of worship, because it enables us to emphasize this whole idea of promise and fulfillment. And as we see this sort of thing happening, then we have faith that God is a saving God, a redeeming God. And we see how those promises are fulfilled. This, I think, is one of the reasons why it's so important in a theological education to give lots of attention to the study of the Old Testament so that we can bring out these promises. Well, if I am watching my watch correctly here, I'm just about finished for the morning. I will have more to say on this subject later.